From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 30th day of April 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll check in on the weekend speech the president made in Washington, Michigan, as it relates to agriculture and farmers. We'll hear more about the cash grain markets with the folks at the Andersons and the weather forecast, too. That'll come from the guys at Brisk Pulse in Chicago as we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. It's the last trading day of the month of April. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
So let's start with what happened in Chicago, and maybe, I don't know whether you've taken a look at the end of the month and how this thing technically looks for the corn and soybeans, but if you have, do we have an idea how we close things out?
Yeah, overnight was somewhat positive on follow-through buying on optimism of China and U.S. negotiation and NAFTA could go fairly well. No uncertainty of Argentine port conditions as far as U.S. being able to capture some additional bean business, meal business around the world. Then we came in and also seen some more concern about world production in wheat. We're seeing some dry conditions in some spots of the world. Then the deliveries were on the light side. I only saw 10 corn deliveries and about 52 meal deliveries, and that was somewhat optimistic, and then to top it off, we saw some overall new business from Argentina, sold another 120,000 tons of beans to Argentina, and so we're approaching over 500,000 tons of beans going to Argentina, mainly new crop stuff, so quite a bit of optimism, but the market kind of went into a spread mode activity with buying corn, selling beans, buying wheat, selling the beans. But to answer your question on the month end, the beans did come in a little bit lower on the month, whereas corn was up 4 to 5 cents on the month, and the wheat market was the big gainer on the month. So kind of a spread activity in how the grain market finished for the month. Technically, when you look at the charts, corn's basically back up to the previous highs or made some new highs by a slight bit. Beans kind of stalled out at some trend line resistance levels. Beans, they make a new high and close lower on the day here, which suggests that maybe we've run out a little bit of steam here and due for some type of retracement over the next few days. But, we're month end. We're seeing some positioning for month end. May Day holiday around the world, so the overall demand could be slow here for the next few days. Then, too, we saw a little bit of concern here through the trading session that China-U.S. negotiations maybe take a little time to get things worked out from the standpoint. There's just a lot of moving parts. And the grains is just a small part of that overall picture. Then lastly, too, just didn't really see a whole lot of new bean sales being announced to China or really anywhere else around the world other than Argentine news. So we're probably set up here to see some type of consolidation or pullback short term. General observation, December corn high today was 418.5. Last year's high was 417.25. So we're basically new crop corn's back up against those highs we made over a year ago last July there, Todd.
Any reason to think that the high will come earlier rather than later this year?
Well, the high will probably come later on in the growing season on crop conditions, concerns, growing conditions. We have that M word floating out there, Madoki, has been well advertised by Merrill, and you know, that could be a concern. Because when you look at the overall supply-demand balance sheet, with a few less acres and you keep demand fairly good, moving that yield up and down a few bushels can change that bottom line in a hurry. So I have a feeling we have some weather concerns later on in the growing season that we can see this corn market particularly become quite exciting. So that's the thing. The funds still have a little bit of buying power in the corn yet. They're long by 140,000 contracts. They were long over 200,000 contracts. But if we have some concerns here during the growing season, that would be the story that the commodity funds would need here to probably get on board for some higher prices. But it's going to have to be weather-driven. And these weather guys have their work cut out here as we go through the growing season.
Just as an FYI, I did call Bunge earlier in the day to check and see if they had any information on how long it will take to repair the outload facility there in Argentina. That's at General San Martin on the Paraná River, just north of Rosario. They didn't get back to me, but it looks like it... I saw some video, and it's actually posted up on the WillAg.org website along with a satellite view of what it looks like during the daytime hour, because the accident to that pier happened in the evening. There are two piers there, and they just didn't get back to me. But I think it's going to take a long time for them to do the repair. It appears that everything out, meaning the belt came down. You can see that crash. So might take a while there, and it'll be interesting to see. I did check also. I'm trying to double check with them. I think that one is one of the largest loadout facilities that they have in Argentina. So it could have an impact over the long run. Okay, so other things that you've been watching at this point, for instance, what do you think about planting in the United States? USDA, of course, has numbers due out in about 40 minutes or so.
Yeah, that's probably the most exciting thing. And when you look at the big picture here, we're in for a big fundamental shift in statistics here. And it's been mentioned for quite some time. I know we picked up on a while back that beans are going in before corn in some areas, or at the same time, if guys, you know, having a corn planter and a bean planter running at the same time. So the planting progress on beans would probably be more significant here as we move forward from the standpoint if producers are really sold on they can yield an extra 5, 10, 15 bushels per acre planting beans early. Trend line yields on beans are going to move higher in through here. So we'll see how this planting progress unfolds. I think the range for corn plantings is 12 to 25% completed in the nation, with the average around 18. Average is about 27%. But here in central Illinois, southern Iowa, and through Missouri, there's particular operations are done with corn and 50% done with beans. So I think these planting progress reports are going to lag somewhat. When we look at beans, the average estimate is anywhere from 4 to 18% complete as a nation, with the average guess about 7% complete. I think that number is going to be higher than that with the progress that we've seen. But, you know, locally it's more central part of the Midwest, whereas Indiana's struggling, Ohio's struggling. You get up in the central Minnesota, it's going to be a while yet. They feel you get central western Minnesota, it could be another 4 to 5 days yet in some areas and through there. But it's a long process. It's not a race. We still have plenty of time, even though we have a fairly decent rain event here midweek, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again in another week.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, Saturday, the president went to Washington, Michigan for a campaign-style rally, and he talked about farmers. Not a little, but a whole lot.
Disastrous trade deals, which I'm straightening out, and I'm not saying, hey, there may be a little pain for a little while, but ultimately for my farmers, I love my farmers. They're great patriots. Don't forget, The farmers have been doing lousy for 15 years, okay? Let's face it. If you look at a graph, it's been like this. So when I say I'm negotiating NAFTA, and if they don't make a fair deal, I'm terminating NAFTA, and I'll make a great deal. You're going to do much better. Or when we take on China or the European Union, which has tremendous blocks, it's very hard for us to sell stuff into the European Union. It was put there to take advantage of the United States, okay? So when we do, not anymore, you're right, not anymore. We told them that yesterday, actually. They said the same words. Not anymore. Those days are over. But we've got to open up these markets. It's not fair.
Not fair, and according to President Trump, not the fault of the other nations, but of all previous administrations in the United States. Therefore, he's willing still to walk away from any trade deal. The president also despises the World Trade Organization, the WTO, and blames it directly for the influence of China around the planet.
They became a major power since the World Trade Organization, which is a horror show for us. Horrible. And I looked at President Xi, and he's the boss. He's the guy. I said, but it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's the fault of the representatives of the United States who allowed you to get away with it. I don't blame you, right? Right?
So President Trump's tough stance on trade remains. However, immigration is an interesting function, especially as he's become more of a politician and thought a lot more about the middle part of America and farmers and their particular labor needs, as it happens.
And for the farmers, okay, it's going to get good. And we're going to let your guest workers come in, because we're going to have strong borders, but we have to have your workers come in. You know, the unemployment picture is so good, it's so strong, that we have to let people come in. They're going to be guest workers. They're going to come in. They're going to work on your farms. We're going to have the H-2Bs come in. We're going to have a lot of things happening. But then they have to go out. Then they have to go out. But we're going to let them in because you need them. You need them.
In the last decade, farmers and ranchers have increasingly turned to the H-2A agricultural guest worker program to help combat growing labor shortages as the number of undocumented immigrant workers has declined. Again, President Trump made his comments during a speech in Washington, Michigan over the weekend. Let's now go back to Washington, D.C. for one other story, this one on the Farm Bill. Democrats on the House Rules Committee, which structures the debate process for legislation on the floor, sent a letter on Friday to Chairman Pete Sessions. He's a Republican from Texas, requesting that he reject a, quote, Trump-style loyalty pledge, unquote, from members to vote in favor of the Farm Bill if they want to propose amendments. The letter was a response to some comments made by the Ag Committee Chairman Conaway last week during an interview on a radio show when he said so-called poison pill proposals to the Farm Bill could be thwarted by a debate rule that prohibits lawmakers who plan to vote against the legislation from offering any amendments. In a statement, House Agriculture Ranking Member from the Democratic side, Colin Peterson of Minnesota, said Conaway should be less worried about Democrats and focus on members of the GOP who might offer amendments to the Farm Bill that target farm safety net, nutrition, and conservation programs. For his part, Chairman Conaway held a meeting Friday with House Republicans to discuss what he's proposing in the Farm Bill when Congress returns from recess next week. He says he plans to meet with the Tuesday group and the Freedom Caucus. It's a question, the Texas Republican says, of whether there's enough good stuff on the SNAP side to cause lawmakers who had problems overall with the last Farm Bill to vote yes. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. It seems agriculture is consistently in the spotlight in Washington, D.C., even when it has to do with the oil industry.
The Texas senator leading the oil industry's fight against ethanol and the RFS claims there's no deal yet with the White House to cap ethanol credits known as RINs, or Renewable Identification Numbers. This despite hints by the administration it has already given refiners what they want. A Senator Ted Cruz was asked at an oil refiner rally in front of the U.S. Capitol if the White House hadn't already given the industry the cap on RIN ethanol credits at once through Environmental Protection Agency approved waivers.
Nothing has been announced yet, and so we have been discussing this for many months. Starting back in December, I brought 10 senators to the White House to sit down with the president to put these jobs front and center. So I'm hopeful the president's going to do the right thing, but the Washington lobbyists are pushing hard against it.
However, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has already suggested to a Senate Ag Committee that the administration has given oil refiners the ethanol credit price cap they sought through credit waivers.
I am letting the industry, the petroleum industry, know that the waivers granted have been the essence of any kind of RIN cap, and an effective RIN cap that they have enjoyed this year already.
Perdue told ag lawmakers that ethanol demand is being destroyed by the EPA waiver to the tune of almost 1.2 billion gallons, and the EPA chief Scott Pruitt had essentially circumvented the instructions the president gave him to preserve the 15 billion gallon ethanol mandate. But President Trump has been mum on the waivers and for months on a RIN cap, suggesting the president may feel he's done politically what he can in helping oil refiners without further alienating another key constituency, corn and ethanol producers. In the meantime, Cruz has dismissed calls by House Energy Subcommittee Chairman and Southern Illinois Representative John Shimkus for a legislative RFS fix.
That's really saying don't solve the problem. There is a solution that could happen today. It could be announced right now. These jobs can be saved.
He's referring to oil industry jobs. Cruz argues it would take 60 votes in the Senate to solve the RFS dispute, and that the votes simply are not there. Let's check the cash grain markets now with Amy Sage of the Andersons. Hey, thanks for being with us, Amy.
My pleasure.
So I suspect it's quiet there today, though we're up on kind of the top end of the range. Producers are in the planter. They don't usually make phone calls unless they're really motivated.
That is very true. This is typically a quiet time for us. But as you say, we are trading some levels here, or did trade some levels that we haven't seen in a long time. So we have had a little bit of phone traffic, a few offers being put in, some old crop getting cleaned up, and a little bit of new crop sales too. These are attractive levels that we had an opportunity with last year in some instances, and even December corn. Last summer, the high that we traded on the D17 was 417 and a quarter. So the fact that December 18 traded up to 418 and a half today was encouraging to some, and definitely sparked a little bit of phone traffic, regardless of the fact that guys are busy and dust is flying. So
the phone traffic you had, is that guys who you've already talked with and made sales and they putting additional sales particularly in, or is it first-time sales for the new crop?
A little bit of both, and a lot more of keeping an eye on where the next levels we'll think we'll see is, and people curious about what progress is going on and really what's sparking the rally, especially in this area as guys are planting. It's not normal to really see a lot of green on the screen while at the same time you're running the planter. So it's been a good mood day, I guess, for everybody. So just finding out what those reasons are.
Did you have a good answer for them? And we only have a few seconds left, but a good answer for them as to why it rallied?
I don't think that there's one reason. I think it was just a combination of things. South American weather, wheat, and a positive technical close on Friday contributing to that as well.
And what are your bids for the day?
379 cash corn and 1018 on soybeans.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon, the 30th day of April. Mark Russo is here. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Hey, Mark. It was a cold April, but we're going to finish on a much warmer note across the Midwest. What a nice day today.
Yeah, certainly is today here, Todd. And just compared to what we've been through here in the West, let alone much of the Central and Eastern U.S. this April, yeah, even normal weather just feels so warm here. Actually going to be turning warmer than normal over the next several days. And overall, the pattern for the first half of May, you know, much different compared to what we've seen here in April. We're not totally going the exact opposite. We're getting a distinct warmer than normal and highly anomalous warm pattern here in the Corn Belt, but certainly warm bias variability here, where temperatures averaging out to be a little bit warmer than normal over time. Certainly much different here and certainly needed to help improve soil temperatures to levels that would be supportive of corn germination here, or the portion of the crop that's been seeded. Now, while temperatures are going to be warming up, we are going to see rainfall prospects beginning to increase. So after this past week and a half of fairly open weather across much of the Midwest, that's going to come to an end here starting tomorrow night and going on through the remainder of this week and on into next week. There's going to be multiple waves of low pressure tracking across the Corn Belt. And with those waves, that will produce periodic rain activity. And overall, when you kind of add up the amounts here for this week, it does look like the vast majority of the Midwest, especially in areas of Iowa here in Illinois, and even on into the Eastern Belt, where we're seeing some of the heavier rains here in excess of 1 inch, even a few areas more than 2 inches. And then again, that active pattern looks to continue with, again, a majority of the Corn Belt picking up significant rains next week.
Is it much different than we normally would have in May, so that producers are in the field and then out of the field and then back in the field again?
This week looks a distinct wetter than normal week once it kicks in here on Wednesday and goes through basically Thursday and wraps up in Friday in the Eastern Belt. Next week is looking a little more, you know, normalish. So you might, compared to this week, maybe an extra day or two of dry conditions in between those rains, but next week looks more normal overall.
And then finally, check in on the second crop or Safrinha corn for me in Brazil.
Yeah, April looks to go down into the books here as one of the driest Aprils this decade across areas of Paraná and Mato Grosso do Sul, the southern portion of the Safrinha corn belt in Brazil. And this week is going to feature more of the same, dry conditions, warmer than normal temperatures. We do see opportunities for rain, though, in week two as this very unsettled conditions across Argentina begins to shift northward into that area, providing relief for the southern Safrinha corn belt in Brazil.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd.
You have a good week. That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.